Hello, everybody, and welcome. I'm Alan Seale from the Center for Transformational Presence at transformationalpresence.org, and I'm here with my good friend and colleague David Robinson from Truly Powerful at trulypowerful.com, and thank you so much for joining us. Lots more people are coming in here. The dashboard is filling up, so welcome to everyone who's just joining us here at the last minute as well. You know, the purpose of these dialogues is to explore new paradigms of leadership in community and business and society and government, and to discover approaches and ways of thinking, fundamental shifts in perception that can help shape leadership in service of a greater good. We have lots of topics in mind for future calls, and we also invite you to suggest topics or questions that you would like to be addressed in future calls. You can just send an email to me at alanseale@alanseale.com or to David at david@trulypowerful.com. So, David, I'm thrilled that you're here and really looking forward to this call very much. Let's get started. Our topic today is leadership as a practice.
Go ahead.
Well, just to kind of lay a little context for this, you know, we're living in this rapidly changing world where everything is speeding up faster and faster, and so paradigms and practices and conventional wisdom of the past that maybe served us in the past but aren't working so well now. We thought we knew the rules, and now the rules are changing. So if we're looking at how to be kind of on the leading edge of leadership and coaching, understanding quantum rules, understanding how life works as energy in motion, and finding the new game here. The new game really is transformation and co-creation. So, you know, really it's great to come right to you, David, because this topic was kind of your suggestion. Why don't you get us started by talking about what does this mean for you, leadership as a practice?
Yeah, thank you, and welcome, everybody. You know, both Alan and I have had really an extraordinary opportunity over the last, I know, several years, decade or more, to work in all kinds of environments, corporate, nonprofit. We've worked in education. We both have backgrounds in the arts. And during that time, particularly in the last decade or so, we've seen some very specific characteristics and practices that are shared by really great leaders during this time of really intense world transformation. And when I say great leaders, I'm not necessarily talking about the person on the top. I'm talking about the people who are intentional and in service to something that's bigger than themselves. They're empowering other people. And so as a first call, we thought we'd really lay out what we see those people practicing and what we're starting to recognize as practices of great leadership. And we thought it really most important to start with this particular topic because the practices that we're noticing as great practices of leadership kind of stand in stark contrast to the forms of leadership. You know, as Alan said, there's kind of a conventional wisdom. There are practices that are old world practices that are not functioning well in the new realities that we're living and working in right now. And so, for instance, we're all still in the midst of a meltdown, economic meltdown, that started in 2008. And it was infinitely avoidable. It wasn't a natural disaster. It was a failure of leadership. And a failure of leadership to actually look at and deal with the world in which we live, as opposed to something that really no longer applies to us. So with that as kind of an introduction, we want to lay out for you, we're going to talk together. Alan and I are going to dialogue for about, a half an hour, and then we're going to open it up for your questions. And what we'll do is we'll lay out some of these practices that we see. And the first one, Alan, I'm gonna kind of throw it out there and give it a frame that makes sense to me, and then ask you to jump in and fill it out, because we both have a shared language, but also a different language around some of these practices. So the first one that I think is so powerful is the presence that the leader brings in the moment to the community, the group, the organization. And by presence, what I mean by that is to really be focused and to bring a focus on what they bring to the community as opposed to what they can get out of the community. And in an expansive way, I've been reading a lot. I read this yesterday, actually, and I wrote this phrase down because I thought it really spoke to this capacity for presence. And the journalist was writing that there's a great difference in our world right now in leadership, and you see it through those that are trying to extract wealth from the world versus those who are trying to create wealth for the world. Capitalism is about wealth creation, not about wealth extraction. And wealth extraction is leadership out of alignment. It is people who are leading according to what they can get from the world as opposed to what they can create for it. And that's a kind of presence. That's what you really focus on, how you focus your work and your life and your intentions, how you align your integrity, what you believe you're in service to, creates a kind of presence. What would you add to that, Alan?
Well, I love how you're getting us started here, and I think about presence, and one of the things I love, David, about, as you said, we speak a common language, and then we kind of speak two different languages in other ways, and how your language so comes to things from that place of story, and the story that we're telling ourselves, the story that we're living into, and so forth, and that's such a hugely powerful part of what you do and what you bring to us, and I'm always thinking of things in terms of energy. And
right.
What's happening there with energy, and so it's interesting to bring these two together. And when we start to talk about presence, the first place is to go to being fully present. And there's certainly lots and lots being talked about these days about being present in the moment. And everywhere I go to teach, then you know we're hearing about Eckhart Tolle and his work, the Power of Now, and all that's really important work, and the power of getting present in the moment. So that certainly is one piece of it, and the powerful leader in especially today's world is able to be incredibly present in this moment as this moment is constantly changing and really riding the wave of the present moment, being so fully right here, right now. So there's that first piece of just being fully present, and then the second piece that kind of comes on into what you're talking about, David, is then what is the presence that you bring to this moment? What is the energy? When we talk about presence, we're talking about kind of the composite of who you are and how you're showing up. It's the composite of your beliefs and your attitudes and your perspectives, your paradigms, as well as your actions and your opinions and, you know, all these, your decisions, your choices, your habits. It's the totality of who you are is the energy that you bring into the present moment. So this whole idea of practicing presence, what does that mean, the practice of presence, is to be almost hyper-aware of the energy that you bring into the room when you walk in, the energy that you are bringing to a particular moment, the presence that you are radiating in that moment. And is that a presence, in the most simple terms, I suppose, is that a presence that's really opening what's happening there, or is it a presence that is trying to control what's happening there, or shut it down, or to explore it? What is the kind of fundamental energy that you come into the room with? I suppose that you could say along with presence then comes that whole idea of intention, practicing really clear intention, a practice that I speak with my clients often about when they are in leadership positions, especially, is being so clear as you are about to walk into that meeting or into that conversation with that next person, or as you are about to lay out a plan for something, what is your intention going into that? And what is the situation asking you for? It's not just what do I want to have happen here, but what is this situation asking me for? What is the energy I'm asked to be a steward for as I walk into this meeting, as I walk into this situation? So that there is something bigger that we're paying attention to and riding a wave here. This is all a huge part of presence, and the energy that we're bringing in. I love, David, how you're talking about, you know, are you adding value, or are you looking for what value you can get out of it? The beautiful way that you talk about that, to come into the situation and say, not what can I get out of this situation, but what is it that I'm being asked to contribute here, which is even a bigger statement than what do I have to contribute here, but rather what am I being asked to contribute here from the greatest potential of the moment.
You know, Alan, one of the words that you just used that I think is really important to this practice of presence is stewardship. You know, what am I being asked to steward? And if you just even look at that language, that's a language that assumes that you are in service to something bigger. You're not extracting wealth from something, which is a service to self action. You are actually bringing something to a greater whole. You are stewarding something, which is a very practical. You know, I was writing a note as you were talking that when you read leadership manuals and texts from the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, they're all built on the idea of control, which was another thing that you threw out to us at the group, this idea of leadership as control, management as compliance. And those are forms that are not capable of keeping up with the pace of change. We are living in a world that even data has a limited amount of use, because by the time you analyze the data, the world's passed you by. And so it requires a different kind of presence, different kind of approach to the creation of your organization or of your community, of your team. It's a much more relational act, and that relational act is the structure that replaces control and compliance structures, I think.
And I love that word that you're bringing in, relational, because it demands that we be in relationship to this moment and what's happening, as well as, of course, in relationship to the people and the ideas and all the things that are going on around us. But it's a relationship to right here, right now, because what is right here, right now may be different than what was 5 minutes ago, but certainly different than what was last week. And so this whole relational piece is I think we can easily start to think about relational and relationship as just between people. But to realize that when we move into the quantum level of presence, then it's relationship between us and ideas, between us and the moment, between us and a circumstance, between us and potential. There's just like the matrix or grid kind of opens way up in a quite extraordinary way. And so to be aware of all those different levels at play at the same time is a really important part to me of this practice of, you know, we're saying leadership is a practice, but it's really, we're talking about transformational leadership, which is very different than transactional leadership.
Right, right. I think
that whole piece that you talked about control and being control and compliance, and I loved how you said that that you can't be in control and at the same time be able to ride the wave of what's happening. You know, one of the things we talk about when we talk about quantum physics principles and the transformational presence, leadership and coach training, is that Heisenberg uncertainty principle that says you cannot measure the velocity of something and the location of it at the same time. And being in control and compliance is like locking something down, and suddenly there is no movement any longer. And so we cannot flow with what is happening. We cannot be a part of that larger evolutionary unfolding in whatever form that's taking.
And I think that, you know, in a way that that principle sort of highlights the disconnect. I mean, where we are practiced, our organizations are built upon control and compliance structures, which are to lock down. They are trying to fix location in a time that's very fluid. One of my 10 years ago, I wrote this, I wish I wrote it, this terrific book by the market futurist Copenhagen Institute. And they were talking about, even then, this is in, you know, the turn of the 21st century, over a decade ago, they were saying the challenge that we're going to have is that we are now past the age of information and we're into the age of story. And what they meant by that is that the event horizon, the pace of change is so close to us. It's right on top of us. And we're so schooled at trying to fix our location that the data that we're operating out of is antiquated before we can actually put it into use. And so it calls us to, in their words, story ourselves. Scenario ourselves into the future. And you have to create several scenarios because you don't know which one is actually going to play out. You have to have a clear intention and five scenarios and start to act on it and start to move with it and start to dance according to it. And that's not the absence of structure. It's just the shift of structure. So that relationship, the accent is not on time is money. The accent is on relationship is money. You have to structure very specific, empowered relationships as opposed to, you know, the organizational structures that we're all used to.
So as you're talking about that, David, then it kind of takes me to, in a way, maybe another practice here of transformational leadership, which is partnering with the potential and committing to potential, letting go of attachment to an outcome. When you're talking about relationship here, then it's we are taught to have relationship with an outcome. We're not taught to have relationship with potential. And when you're talking about looking out to the future and, well, we don't know what it's going to be, and so we have to spin out five different scenarios, and the truth is that it might not end up being any of those five scenarios either. So if we are making a specific plan for how am I going to operate in each one of these five scenarios, well, then what do we do? If it turns out to be something different, oh, my gosh, now what do I do? You know?
Right.
So if we are partnering with the potential that is wanting to unfold, rather than worrying about a specific outcome, we are much more capable of riding the wave to wherever that happens to go. And our focus then is on listening to that potential and responding to it, again, being the steward for that potential. And when we are a steward for something, it means listening to it and letting it tell you what it needs. Mm-hmm. So there's this whole other shift in our perspective, too, from following the potential. It means that we're going to go stand in the future and let the future show us the way to get to it. That's a very different approach than if we are standing in today and looking forward and imagining what five different futures could turn out to be. So it's interesting that book that you're talking about, written lo those many 10 years ago, the beginning of this century, and it was about, you know, it was written by the futurists. I would actually even then challenge that a bit to say, that feels like it's way too much to figure out if I'm standing in today and trying to figure out what five different futures would be. I'd rather just go stand in the future, feel the potential of what is it that's unfolding there, and ride that wave.
You know, what's I think, important, I think sometimes that we're, you know, we're sitting on the mountain, so we don't see it. And we all have certain assumptions and practices that keep us arguing for certain beliefs and assumptions. It's not that you see it because you believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you see it because that's what you believe. And And one of the things that I just love, I mean, there are all of these statistics that are available to us. So, for instance, in the year 2004, the most sought-after occupation didn't exist in the year 2001. That's enormous. It wasn't even in someone's eye. And if you're in an outcome focus, which is something that I think is so important that you brought forward, then you're problem solving. You've set an outcome, you've established a certain number of goal steps, and then you start taking those steps, and inevitably, I know, Alan, you're seeing this everywhere that you're looking too. You take the first step and the world's changed. So you try to take the second step, but increasingly the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth step doesn't apply at all.
Yeah, exactly.
So you start to put out more fires. I think education for us right now is a huge demonstration of what it is to be outcome focused and not working the other way around. To work from the potential, the standing in that potential, what is it that is possible? And then working towards that as opposed to setting out an outcome and trying to step toward it. And it inevitably becomes less and less relevant to the world in which you're standing.
So then this really takes us into an entirely different understanding of what it means to have long-term vision.
Yeah.
Because now we're looking at long-term vision in leadership, whether that's in our personal lives or for the world, and all the levels in between. We're looking at long-term vision as potentials wanting to unfold, as opposed to here's what we're going to create in the next 10 years, this specific outcome, this specific thing. As you just said in one way, to say it slightly different way, everywhere I go, I hear people saying, well, this was our goal, this is what we started out towards, but then something happened and we ended up having to move over here, and then our funding was cut, and so then we had to go over here and start moving in this direction, and then something sidetracked us, and it's on and on it goes. Because, again, as you're saying, everything is changing so quickly. Well, it changes what's normal. The universe is all energy, and that energy is constantly in motion, and therefore it's going to be constantly changing. As it's speeding up, we're just sort of coming to the place where we can't control that so well anymore, have to just ride the wave there. And so to look at visioning, here then we talk about another practice of transformational leadership, is to recognize that visioning is all about a sense of a direction and a potential that we are moving towards and that is unfolding, rather than our vision is to create this center and make this happen and we'll have these five products. It's a whole different world. And the conventional wisdom tells us you have to have a vision and you have to set goals and you have to do it exactly in this way. And it's not working so well now because everything is changing so quickly.
I work with this terrific man who came to me because he was very, very frustrated with his organization. And he said, it's like we're always working on the car and we can never get it out of the garage. Because just when we get the car fixed, the rules of the road change and we've got to go back into the garage. And I thought, what a terrific metaphor. It's about a relationship with potential as opposed to a relationship with an outcome. It's orientation to a potential as opposed to an orientation with an outcome.
Yeah. And so right along with this whole shift in our understanding of visioning, then to me also comes a shift in understanding how long things take. I talk about it as cathedral building, and one of the other things that I hear every place that I go and work in the world these days is people talking about the shortage of strong and effective leaders and the shortage of wisdom, whether that's in business or society or government. And it seems to me that there's a parallel between this shortage of wise and visionary effective leadership and our increased obsession with short-term results. And I hadn't thought about this until this instant, but perhaps part of our obsession on a subconscious level with short-term results is because things are changing so fast that the short-term is all we feel like we can control. So we're going to grab onto it and hold on tight, you know, and just focus on what I know I can sort of influence and make happen in this short time. Well, transformational leadership is inviting us then into that cathedral building space again, coupling this whole idea of long-term vision as being a vision of potential and what's wanting to unfold as opposed to a specific outcome, but also recognizing that those energy flows, that evolutionary unfolding that is happening, that we are called to be a part of, it may or may not happen fully, become fully manifested in our lifetimes, and that's okay. I think of it as cathedral building because if you visit those huge cathedrals of Europe or the sacred sites around the world, the ancient sacred sites, and you realize it took hundreds of years to build some of those places. And then you think about the people who were actually building them. None of them had any expectation of seeing the finished thing. They just were doing their part. They were carving that gargoyle or putting that next stone in place, and that's just what they did. And so for us also in doing transformational work to realize that there are the short-term pieces, but there's also the long-term arc that's happening in a transformational unfolding, an evolutionary unfolding process. And how are we supporting that by realizing that we're working towards something that is much bigger than we are as individuals, and that it's okay if we don't see the finished product in our lifetime.
And in fact, I think that's the leadership. I think that's exactly what is being called for within a great leader right now. You brought up this really important point, and that is that with the pace of change, this focus on short-term results, right? It's the test score today. It's the data in the quarter. It's the, you know, the adjustment in the financial markets on the day.
There's an election cycle as we're
exactly right. And so we polarize, but more importantly, when things are moving that fast and we try to grab on and control the change, really what we're entering into is a kind of survival mode. And that survival mode is what's underneath the extraction of wealth from the community as opposed to putting your focus on what you bring to it. What you bring to it is the cathedral building. If you're really about creating the best world for everyone in your community, and that definition of community includes the world or whatever your definition of community is, you have to get out of that short-term survival mode, the fear of having enough. And I think a lot of the leadership collapses that we're seeing are really being driven by that short-term, you know, that definition that throws you into a kind of, I've got to get my piece of the pie now, and so I'm going to create credit defaults. Swaps, you know, like that, or deregulate things so that really that movement towards grabbing what you can grab right now is a failure of leadership.
So how do we turn this around so we don't keep giving energy to what's not working here? And
exactly. Well, but I think what the reason that I wanted to bring that up is to say, yes. So there's a survival mode energy. And the great leaders that I'm meeting, the people that I'm experiencing that are really bringing change to the world, aren't in a survival mode. They're in a cathedral building mode. They're moving towards something. They're not running away from something.
It's interesting that you said they aren't in survival mode. They're in cathedral building mode, as opposed to, you know, we might think, are you surviving or are you thriving? And what's so beautiful about making that distinction in that way to me is that, again, it's when we think about thriving, there's, I don't know, there's something still kind of individual in a way about that. If we shift that thriving into then the community, we shift that thriving into who are we as a culture, who are we as a global community, whatever level you want to look at that. And then we look at that cathedral building and realize that, okay, so moving out of survival into that cathedral building, into that long-term vision, and into that sense of what is moving here in the service of a greater good. What is the way, how are we creating a world now in which it's no longer about winners and losers, that everybody gets at least some of what they need? I think about a lot, you know, my last book is called Create a World That Works, and I think about, so a world that works is not necessarily a perfect world. You know, if we're just striving for a perfect world, we're going to be pretty frustrated, I think, for a long time. But if we can instead say, no, so what are some of the qualities and characteristics that this world that works has? And there are a number of them. You know, I'm sure everyone on this call could come up with several. One I think about is that people listen more than they talk, and that we're willing to be really fully present with one another. But it's beyond that. It's looking at how do we create a world in which everyone is getting at least some of what they need. Creating a world in which everyone is getting, is being served in some kind of way. And a world in which at least we're willing to recognize that there is a connection between everything. What does that mean?
And you know, there's a I love these words, thrive and outcome, next to each other also, because it wraps us back to that second practice about partnering with potential. That the relationship, when you create a relationship with an outcome, you create a finite. It is the outcome that determines the relationships.
Right.
Stops. There's an arrival place. And when you create a relationship with potential, which is the same thing as saying thriving, there isn't an arrival place. That's a relationship every day.
And it's a relationship with the infinite.
Right. This moment, it goes back to that first practice of presence. You are bringing thriving, and you cannot thrive unless everyone in your team is thriving. And
so,
that's an ongoing garden.
Yeah, yeah. You know, David, to kind of wrap something here a little bit of us talking and be able to open up to the whole group, I think about all these things that we're talking about and what does it take to be able to move in this direction of transformational leadership. And one of the biggest words that comes up to me is courage, that it takes courage to stand up and say, no, I actually think we have to work a different way now. We have to look at things a different way. Perhaps it takes a different perspective here. That can take a lot of courage. And there's a quote that my friend Virginia, I think, is on the call here, and I actually got this quote from her. So thank you, Virginia, for this. From Audre Lorde, who is a Caribbean-American poet and activist. And she said, "When I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, then it becomes less and less important whether I'm afraid. When I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, then it becomes less and less important whether I'm afraid." So what I'd love to invite us to here as we open up the call to everyone is then to invite us all into our power and to say, what does it mean, our authentic power, and to say, what would it mean if we were so committed to our vision in the service of a greater good that it just didn't matter anymore whether we were afraid to take that stand, to take that step, to speak out, and to do something differently. Anything you want to say, David, before we open it up and see what wisdom,
you know, just,
what brilliance wants to come from our everyone on the call?
I was so struck by that quote, And I, one of the, you know, everybody on the call, Alan and I sent each other notes about practices, of course. And one of the practices that Alan sent to me was from this quote, and it it is to dare to be powerful. And if you put that in line with the things that we've talked about, you know, practicing presence, practice what you bring, practice partnering with potential and get out of problem solving. Vision is a direction. Potential is unfolding. So practice relationship and writing the changes. Practice cathedral building. You may not know the outcome. So thrive. Thrive in this moment by making sure that everybody else thrives. And that brings me to this dare to be powerful, which I think is a kind of ownership. Really owning it. Like the practice is to own it. This is mine to do. The relationship is not 80% mine, it's 100% mine. To create thriving in this moment. And that's a practice. It's a full ownership, which is a characteristic of a great leader, I think.
Thank you for that. Let's open the call to your thoughts, not just your questions. You're certainly welcome to ask questions, but please join us. And what contribution do you have to make to this dialogue here? If you'd like to speak, just press 1 on your phone, and I'll see your hand raise, and I can give you the microphone to speak. I'd like to something here or ask a question. No hands going up. here's something from Beth. Just a second, Beth.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
Hi. I've been a teacher for 11 years, and just this year stepped into a curriculum specialist role where I'm still a teacher, but I'm a teacher leader slash administrator. I have no power as far as hiring or firing. But what I've been thinking about as you've been talking is this control and compliance versus relational leadership, and thinking about my practice in the classroom, and that several times in my career I've been accused by administrators of wanting to be my kids' friends and not maintaining that boundary there. But it wasn't, I always felt like attacked because of that, because it's not that I was ever inappropriate with my students or shared information that was personal with them, but it very much a relational kind of classroom. And I do keep in touch with a handful of students after they graduate, and I was thinking about that outcome-based, my job as a teacher, and at the end of the 4 years, that relationship will be severed and I will never again hear from them again kind of thinking. And that control and compliance in the classroom as far as discipline, where I've learned that if you have relationships with people, the discipline and control really isn't an issue.
Mm-hmm. Just say that last statement again. That's so important.
When you have relationships with people, the discipline and control isn't really an issue. And I worked with highly at-risk kids, and it became a different kind of teaching for me because I was teaching them executive function kinds of things. You're 18 years old, and you're about to blow up. You know, you're about to call me every name in the book and throw a desk and everything else. But you can stop right now and make a choice. You're free to go in the hall and calm down. You do what you need to do, take a walk, get a drink of water, you know, and then come back and let's look at this again. And that was relationship. You know, some people would say that's also discipline, but I'm putting it, I put it in their hands. And they trusted me enough to listen to what I was saying and choose to follow that or not.
You know what, Alan? Beth, I'm sitting here grinning. I have this Cheshire grin, so it's probably good that I'm in this room by myself because I would scare everyone. But Beth is one of the great leaders that I have met in the last few years, and she's articulating, I think, something that I think is so important, and it is actually, you know, in a way we're talking about this old world of control and compliance coming up against leadership through empowerment, and the thing that Beth, that I love that you're talking about, is that is a great example of empowering somebody. You're making that student powerful. You're not controlling them. You're not asking them to comply. You're helping them to be self-directed, self-regulated, which is the skill that they will then take out into the world and themselves be powerful. They'll know that their choices are their choices. Versus right. Their choices are forced choices by the authority.
Well, and many people live their lives feeling like they don't have any choice, especially kids. And to give them a choice, to give them options, is huge. I mean, I remember one of the first days with this class, I tried to take a student's cell phone from him. This student is now serving 40 years in jail, not because of this relationship, but something else that he did. And he just fired up, and right away I learned, okay, this is not something that I need to challenge him about or control. What choice can I give him about this cell phone? You know, step out of this argument, McCracken.
Right. And I think, you know, part of one of the conversations that we're all having around really great leadership, it's what I meant by shifting the structure off the control and compliance and putting it into the relationships. The structure is actually within the relationships that we set up. So what Beth is really talking about is so in this world of classroom, it's the same in the world of corporate cubicle. How do you set up relationships so that the people within them, within that classroom, are self-regulating themselves? They're directing themselves. They're acting out of specific choices and knowing the impact of those choices. So they're not buying into any kind of victim scenario or being forced to do anything scenario, but really in the world as empowered people who are then empowering other people. It's a domino.
We have several other people who'd like to speak. Let's invite them on into the conversation. Kathleen, I believe you are the next person who would ask to speak. Let me just give you the mic. Kathleen.
All right. Hi. Thank you. I came in late to the call, just in case something I say has already been repeated or framed out. But I just want to share an experience I'm having listening to your conversation. Fairly recently, I finished a doctoral program in leadership and change, where for 6 years I very much hung out in the conversation that you have been having. Studied a lot with Bob Keegan and Bill Torbit and Otto Scharmer, and it has been a really inspiring 6 years, and shifted my consciousness a lot in terms of leadership and what is needed for 21st century. So the experience that I am currently having is, so I had all of that. I left the East Coast. I went to the West Coast. Still unclear why I did all this, but nonetheless, here I am in the Bay Area, and took a position as a chief diversity officer in a university that's focused purely on healthcare professions and is also a subsidiary to a larger healthcare organization. Now, there's a book on quantum leadership in healthcare. I can't remember now. O'Malley wrote it. And it was one of the first books I read as I started my doctoral journey. So I know there's potential. But I will tell you that 9 months into this position, and I'm used to big state public universities, lots of liberal arts, law schools, business schools, so a big synergy of conversation going on. Here it's a small school, control and compliance is how they think because they are training healthcare professionals. So it's all very linear. It's very binary. You know, it's either in or out. If I'm going to be a nurse, anesthetist, I am not screwing around with the nuances, the gray areas. I'm not feeling into any potential, right? I got to get my drops right. So the whole mentality, including the leadership, because the leadership comes out of the healthcare professions. I do not. Is this other way of thinking. And I, at the moment, even though, which is why I'm on the call, I just want to hear all these words again to remind me. But I feel like I'm sort of suffocating because it's difficult. Because I also don't, at the moment, don't carry the, well, I'm imagining that with some people, my credibility, because, first of all, I'm white, but also, more importantly, I don't come from a healthcare profession. I come from a legal background. And so it is just difficult. So there's, I'm aware of a cynicism arising in me as I listen to you two talk and think, oh, man, I so love this conversation. I love this. I believe it in the core of my being. But I want you to come into my organization, and I want you to follow me around for a month, and then I want to have this conversation with you. So, yeah. I realized, and I got this, you know, when I was writing my dissertation, you know, Kathleen, you got to take it down to the ground, and, you know, because I love staying up at this level. But I'm on the ground here, and I'm on a ground that waxing, even philosophically, is not in the ambiance of this culture. And so I've been charged with getting a diversity plan written, get it off the ground, what are our quotas, la, 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 hoo, hoo, hoo. We have outcomes. I had to present to the Board of Regents last night.
So, Kathleen, I want to just interrupt here for a moment. And first of all, and thank you for that, because I think that that's another really important place that we need to go on another call, is to then look at, so what's the bridge? You know, because we have to start with wherever an organization is. And there's another distinction that comes up for me as you're talking about control and compliance, and of course the places where that actually is pretty essential. I mean, I actually, if I'm going to go have surgery, I want to know that the guy who's giving me the anesthetic knows exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, he's not feeling into the future here.
That's right. You know, and so it's to look at, you know, this distinction in here too of there's something called very high standard, you know, of mm-hmm. where. How are we measuring standards, and what does that mean? There's so many subtleties and so many places to go with the conversation and to create distinctions here. So I just want to thank you for what you're bringing and to recognize that this issue and scenario that you're bringing is very real in the world in lots and lots of places, and that's also something we need to address.
Yes.
Thank you.
Kathleen, it's also shoot me an email, you know, after this call, and I want to put you in touch with some resources. And in one way, I just want to reflect to you that part of what you're experiencing is the healthcare equivalent of what Beth was talking about. The work is, you're right, that you are in the ground truth. And you know, to pull a metaphor from Otto Scharmer, the soil, right? The mm-hmm. crop that mm-hmm. we produce is directly related to the richness of the soil. And you're right now doing the work of soil, you know. And healthcare, like education, is in a huge white knuckle holding on to.
Well, and see, I have the double whammy because I'm in higher education with
That's right.
the healthcare situation.
Right.
So it's really heavily laden. And I think really, you know, the question is twofold, and I understand for another call, but one is, how does one hold oneself in a way that is not bastardizing or jeopardizing one's really core beliefs about transformational leadership and how organizational change really works in a climate like this. That's the first thing. And hold it and manifest it in a way with the recognition it may not change.
It may not change in your lifetime.
Well, you know what, but I'm not sure. All right, so this is for another call. So I could take that
yeah.
to another place. But
I know.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, but definitely, Kathleen, send me, because I have some resources, and people that are actually within your same circumstance that I'd love to connect you to.
That would be great. Do I have your email? Is it online somewhere?
It's david@trulypowerful.com.
All right. Is that truly with an E?
No, truly powerful
www.thebestyourself.com.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I want to give the mic to David. David, you're on.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that was me, but
that's you.
Okay, great. And this is Dave calling from the Boeing Company, and so I also came on a little bit late, and so if I missed this, I apologize. But I've heard a lot about empowerment, which to me signifies a permission and authority, and I'm not sure I heard a lot about enablement, which refers to me about the wherewithal and the means to do something. And the distinction that I'd like to call forth and then ask you to comment on is it seems to me that the enablement piece of transformational leadership takes more time, that there is a teaching, mentoring, coaching aspect to it, in addition to the empowerment, which is the letting go aspect. And I wonder if you or some of our other participants could comment on that, please.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, this word enable has two definitions, and one is to empower and the other is to disempower. And I think that it's interesting because, you know what, I love that you're from the Boeing Company, because several years ago I was doing a workshop at the Boeing Company, and we did, we had a lovely long conversation about how the idea of time equals money is an antiquated notion now. It's an industrial era notion, and that, in fact, efficiency is a quality of relationship. And so it's true that I think at the very beginning, it's about establishing a kind of culture. And I know that you work within a very specific culture with very specific demand. But to set up very specific relationships that are relationships of empowerment implies to a lot of people that you relax controls, you relax, and in fact you just shift them, you shift responsibilities. It does take a little bit more time up front. Peter Block years ago wrote a book called Stewardship, and within that book he said it's a fascinating thing, because in every organization he's ever worked with, there's been a debate between the leadership and the employees, the workers. And the workers want more power, and the leadership wants to determine that power. And he said that whenever he's been able to create a circumstance or a culture where the leadership actually goes into an empowerment model, the workers run away from it because it implies a certain kind of responsibility. And that's where the work happens. That's where the time takes, where you create a different culture of responsibility and of very clear, specific direction. And I think, yeah, you know, in response to your question, at the beginning, you're changing a culture, so it does take some time. But once that culture has changed, you save yourself enormous amount of time.
Thank you for that, and I'm not sure that I would necessarily agree with the notion that efficiency is the relational aspect. I think perhaps effectiveness is more relational. Mm-hmm. The more effective we are with what we do. So,
well, that's a great distinction. I think that's a really good distinction. And maybe, you know, I'm writing these down because these are great topics for other calls. What is the difference between efficient and effective? And I think that's a terrific can to open.
And I'm not, please understand, I wasn't taking issue with it. I also am trying to get that distinction clear. So,
I mean that when I say that. That's a terrific can to pop
okay.
open and talk about. Because I think that is, you know, as we're talking about new types of leadership and leadership practices, I think that's one of the topics that we really need to get get our fingers around.
Yeah, it's something that we're trying to focus on. And is this David who I'm talking to?
It is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I recognize. I know.
Yeah. Great to hear your voice again. I enjoyed our conversation from many years ago, and I'll turn it over to the next participant. Thanks again.
Great. Be in touch with me. I would love to have further conversation with you about this efficient, effective dynamic.
And I just want to say one other thing about your, I mean, just to kind of come back to your initial question, and that I think that that definitely there is a, I almost want to say a teaching piece, but I don't want to move it into the place where there's the teacher and the student. But to me, this kind of brings us back to the presence and learning a different kind of presence of what are we modeling and therefore what are we inviting others to as an understanding, as a shift in awareness, and not something, this is not something that you just teach the concept or you introduce the concept and then assume now it's different. No, it's a process of living into a different way of being and living into that empowerment, which to me is an invitation to the person. It's actually, to me, we can't actually give anybody else power for anything, but we can invite them to step into a different awareness and into, therefore, their own power in a way that's really authentic, whatever that is. So just to say that I feel like that what you're bringing here is a really important thing, that there is an invitation, it's a way of living into a different way of being, of a presence, and how do we as leaders begin by living that for ourselves and modeling that, and know that then perhaps in time we are beginning to shift, as David is talking about, a culture. So thank you for that. We're coming right up to the top of the hour. I know that there are other people with hands up, and sorry that we are not getting to you today, but please send us emails. David is david@trulypowerful.com. I'm at alanseal@alanseal.com, and suggest topics to us. And we would love to continue these conversations going forward. David, is there anything you'd like to say in wrapping up?
I'd love for both of us, because I think both of us have opportunities for people to plug into what we're doing. This has been a terrific dialogue, and I've got lots and lots of notes and questions for myself for future conversations. We're going to have these every month, so stay tuned. Attention, and we'll send out notifications. In the next month, I have two classes that I'm offering. One is about power, bringing power to life. It's what I call the ground truth. It's sort of the inside work. And then there's a second cycle that I'll start in April that is bring power to life too. That's what I'm calling it right now. What happens when you have the ground truth in good place? And you really fully step into your power, whether it's leadership, personal power, team power, whatever. Alan, what about for you?
So I have Transformational Presence Leadership and Coach Training coming up in the Netherlands and Sweden, and then later this year in Boston, as well as some other teleclasses and things. Just please visit the website if there's other things you'd like to explore, transformationalpresence.org. Both David and I also offer one-on-one coaching. So any way that we can support you or just continue this conversation in a way that can serve all of us in a greater good, we are here for that. Thanks, everyone, for being with us today, and we look forward to the next time. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You are currently the only person in this conference.